Hi, I'm Adrian Warnock, and I'm here. Actually, this is the sort of prelude to one of our Blood Cancer Uncensored meetings that we do on Zoom every week. Normally, it's quite an informal chat, but sometimes we'll have a guest speaker. Often, when we do that, we've recorded that. Well, today, I decided that as I founded Blood Cancer Uncensored, I would be the guest speaker at my own Zoom, if that makes sense. And I want to talk about something that's been quite dear to my heart and dear to many of our hearts, really, over the last 18 months or so, coming up for 2 years now, which is, of course, COVID. And importantly, before we all groan, there's some positivity and some good news to share, which is quite unusual and quite important to do. If you haven't really been up to speed with COVID, if you have blood cancer, no matter what stage you're at, whether you're at watch and wait, so in other words, phase of treatment where you're not being treated as such, but they're observing you, whether you're in the middle of treatment, and perhaps particularly if you're in the middle of treatment, or whether you're after treatment in remission and you think everything's going really well, it doesn't matter what stage you are, it's now very well recognized that you are, at least to some degree, immune compromised. In other words, that your immune system doesn't work as well as the man in the street. Now, or it doesn't work as well as your own immune system would have done before. Now, having said that, and it's important to stress this at the beginning, it's still true that the majority of people with blood cancer, no matter what stage they're at, if they do catch coronavirus, they'll be okay. They might get quite sick, they might go to hospital, but most people will recover. But we do know that's not true of everyone. And of course, there are some people without conditions like this who get sick. But we're at a higher risk. In fact, it may be as much as a tenfold higher risk in some cases, or maybe even more than that. Now, what can we do about that? Well, a few months ago, I came up with the acronym WARN: Protect, Test, and Treat. WARN, Protect, Test, and Treat. Okay, and this is still true, but the good news is there's a couple of new things that have come out just in the last couple of days on the treat front. One on each side of the Atlantic, actually. We're often mostly American or US on this call, although we do have people from other parts of the world, and they're most welcome to join us or to read here. And indeed, if you're watching this and you fancy being an author and you're from another part of the world, you're most welcome to get in touch, and we could perhaps further internationalize this website. We want to be a sort of one-stop spot, really, where you can hear patient perspectives on both the science, but also the experience of living with this condition. So for us, of course, knowing that we're at higher risk has made it much more stressful than for the general population. And right now, arguably, we're at the highest risk, particularly as this Omicron variant sort of starts to go around the world and seems to be much more infectious. And it may be that for the average person, especially if they've been vaccinated, it's not a major deal. One of my family members in the last week or so has had COVID, and we don't know whether it's Omicron or Beta or Delta or any of these other variants. But for her, it's just been like a very mild cold. And it may be even that Omicron is less severe for the majority of people, but it might still be that it's more severe for us, and we don't know that yet. So it is a particularly concerning time at the moment when everyone is sort of relaxing a little bit, although things are starting to ramp up again in this country. Here in the UK, that a lot of people think COVID's old news, but it's not old news for us, and we need to be careful. And so let's go to the top. WARN. I guess that's what I've just done. People with blood cancer need to be made aware of the fact that they are at higher risk. Particular groups that are even higher risk is anyone who's on current treatment right now, or anyone who's had treatment within the last few months, particularly treatment with something like CD20 antibodies, which are rituximab or obinutuzumab. But indeed, ongoing treatment with ibrutinib or acalabrutinib puts you at a very low chance of making antibodies. And if you don't make antibodies in response to the vaccine, then you're in an even higher risk group than blood cancer as a whole. And I'm in that group. I also don't have any T cells, particularly. I've got very low B lymphocytes, very low T lymphocytes. And I don't make my own antibodies. So at some point this evening, I'll be giving myself an infusion of other people's antibodies, but there's not enough COVID in there to protect me. So I know I'm vulnerable. So hopefully, WARN is a big part of that. Test is a big part of that, because to know which level of risk you're at, one of the best things you can do is have the vaccine and then test yourself to see if you've got antibodies. And the good news is that if you just get a small number of antibodies, say after the first or the second vaccine, if you have a third, the likelihood is that number of antibodies will boost up a lot higher. And probably as well, if you have a fourth, which we're talking about here in the UK, people with blood cancer are all going to be offered a fourth vaccine before some parts of the world have even had their first. So you can argue the moral and the ethics of that. But for some of us who make some blood antibodies, the more vaccine you get, the better. But for some of us, no matter how much vaccine we're given, we just don't make any antibodies. And if that's you and that's me, then obviously coronavirus becomes even more of a worry. And so protection, of course, I mean, this, I guess we know a little bit about masks, hand washing, social distancing. But actually, if you do need to see people, and let's be honest, we can't all remain locked up in prisons forever. If you can't meet them outside, having an open window at least could be a massive thing. I recently heard of a situation, and I don't know, this is secondhand, but where a group of people apparently hired a room out in a pub to watch a football match. And I think there was something like 12 of them, and 12 or 13 of them, and basically all but two caught COVID that night. And the two who didn't catch COVID were next to the window. So, you know, bit of fresh air, really important, especially this time of year when the temptation is it's cold outside. Let's snuggle up warm. We'll put the fire on, open the window, and burn a bit of fuel. Not good for the planet, but it might be good for you. So there we go. Warn, test, protect, treat. Well, there hasn't been much unless you get to the point of needing to be in hospital. And there is some treatment for those who are in hospital. I won't go into all of that now, but there are some treatments and some more news coming in, things like steroids. In fact, things like inhaled steroids has been around for a little while, even for outpatients. But two fantastic pieces of news that have come out this week is, first of all, a development on the monoclonal antibodies front. And actually, we've got two developments on that front, one in the US, one in the UK. So in the US, they've gone the full way now, and the long-acting antibody that I actually had earlier this year as part of the trial is actually now available in the US before you've even got COVID. So this is before you've even been exposed. So the idea here is if you test negative, if you've not made your own antibodies to the vaccine, they can infuse you. It's actually an injection rather than an infusion. Two quite large injections in your butt cheeks. So I used to joke, I offered up my butt for science. But it actually is supposed to protect you for at least 6 months, possibly even slightly longer, because these antibodies are slow acting in terms of getting removed from your system. And apparently it reduces the risk of infection quite dramatically, because if you've got antibodies that are high, the chances of you getting infected are high, and the chances of you having severe infection and death are almost minuscule, even presumably for immune compromised. It's not 100% protection, nothing ever is, but it gives you more protection. So that's great news. If you're in America and you have a blood cancer, now's the time to figure out how you're going to get it. And you might want to talk to your hematologist or your immunologist, your insurance companies, figure out how this is going to work out. I know sometimes these big announcements come and it doesn't necessarily get out immediately. On the subject of antibodies in the UK, we're a little bit behind the curve. Hopefully that long-acting one will be available shortly, but we do have a short-acting one. Now, rather erroneously, it had only be available in hospitals. So you had to wait till you got sick enough to be admitted. But some doctors started gaming the system, probably rightly so, by admitting people with blood cancer or other immune compromise to hospital for the express purpose of giving them this infusion to keep them well. So in other words, they might have a bit of a cough, and some milder symptoms, but nothing too serious, but they'd still admit them. Now, obviously, hospital beds are under pressure, and so this is perhaps a little bit underhand, a little bit naughty, but, you know, this is what we do with pneumonia. If someone's got a mild case of pneumonia, you don't wait till it gets severe. You bring them into hospital and you give them IV antibiotics. So this is the way some doctors were starting to think. So this week, NHS England have cottoned on to this and said what they should have done in the first place, in my view, which is that actually, if you've got blood cancer, you can get this infusion before you ever get admitted. In fact, the sooner the better. In fact, within the first 7 days of getting infected. So really, we want to be doing tests fairly regularly on ourselves if we think there's any chance we might have it. And then as soon as you get a positive test, you want to, in the UK, get in touch with a hematologist or your immunologist, and arrange how it is you're going to get this infusion. And if they sound a bit confused, find the biggest, nearest large city and find how you're going to get it. Ask them how you're going to get it. And if they start being funny about it, write them an email and say, how are you going to explain that I haven't been able to have this treatment because it's licensed and it's available at NHS England are funding it. And we don't want to see a sort of postcode lottery where some people get it and some people don't. Because the sooner you get the treatment, the better. And obviously the ideal is for you to already have the antibodies before you even encounter the virus. So then the final brilliant piece of news is that there is now an antiviral. So many of us will take acyclovir, which works against shingles. Some of us will know of a drug called Tamiflu, which works against the flu, although it's debatable how well it works, although I suspect it works probably better for us than it does for other people who may not need it as much. I know for me, it seemed to help me get over flu one time. But there's now a very specific drug that is very good at stopping the virus multiplying. So it interferes with the virus producing more of itself in your body. This new drug has been made available in the UK. It's been in theory available for a little while, but this week they've agreed the funding, they've agreed the criteria. And I think you might even be able to wangle it to get both, but certainly, and there'd be no reason not to, and certainly that would be what I would push for if I was to become positive. So I'm planning on writing an article about the detail of all of this over on Blood Cancer Uncensored. So you'll see that over there, and this will be embedded in it. But in the meantime, I'd be really interested to hear of anyone who's had experience with getting a hold of these treatments, either the antiviral treatment or the monoclonal antibody treatment, and what their experience is. For me personally, I had the monoclonal long acting, as I say, as part of the trial. I knew I had the active because I got unblinded, I got told what I had. And actually, I had no side effects at all, really. And, you know, obviously, I didn't know whether I was being protected or not. So and I only had a little while where I knew that it had worked, but you know, maybe it saved my life, I don't know. So there we go. Warn, we've done that today. Test, we've talked about that. Protect and treat. And isn't it good news that we've got a little bit more treatment around at the moment? So I've got a few people on the call at the moment. I don't know if anyone's got any questions they want to ask in the chat room or on the speak, if you like. You can unmute yourself at this point if you like and ask any questions. And if no one's got any questions, I shall just cut the question bit out and pretend we didn't have one. But surely someone's got a question or a comment, an experience. It's a shame some people aren't on, because I know some of our members have also had this infusion themselves. So anyone got any comments? It looks like, is that Sue I see unmuting herself? Do you have something to say?
Yeah, it's me. I hadn't really heard about the antiviral one, Adrian. Is there sort of a balance in terms of which is the most effective in terms of monoclonal antibody or the antiviral? What's the antiviral called? Is it?
I've forgotten the name of it, quite frankly. It's got some sort of IR at the end. I know that all of them do. But I do have it written down, but just not in front of me right now. So it's like, but it's very specific to coronavirus and it stops it multiplying. Okay. And then obviously the antibody, the hope is it never even gets into your cells. So it's an interesting one. In theory, you would expect the antibody to stop it from ever becoming a problem, but if you do become affected, then you'd want the antiviral. So hard to tell, really.
Okay.
I suspect both will be useful.
And are both only are they only going to use both when you've tested positive? There's nothing pre.
Yeah, the antibodies, once you've got the long acting one, then that will be available for when people, before people test positive.
Okay.
But the antiviral is obviously once you've got the infection.
Yeah.
So you could use two, you could use both together, I suspect, and I think they'll fund both together. I haven't actually confirmed that, but I believe that that makes sense anyway, because they act in such different ways, there'd be no reason not to do both.
I mean, over here, what you said about hoping it's not going to be a postcode lottery, I mean, I know that Maggie, who's often on the call, who's at Leeds as well, I know she's already emailed our consultant who was well aware of them and said, you know, if you know, try not to get a positive test, obviously, but if you do, then contact us immediately. So I'm and that's a big teaching hospital. So what you were saying about finding the big city teaching hospitals is possibly.
I definitely think that it's worth asking your centre right now, in the next couple of days, wherever you are in the world, how can I get access to these treatments? And I guess that's almost the main sort of take home. I don't know if anyone's got any other sort of questions at this point or comments at this point.
Adrian, Some people would argue against testing on the basis that, well, what level is a safe level? What level means you're protected?
I understand that. I mean, the point is this: in order to get access to the antibody treatment, you have to prove that you don't have any antibodies of your own. So zero antibodies is the marker for needing the extra treatment. Exactly what level of antibodies is safe is hard to say, to be honest. But if you have some, then that's an indicator that it's probably worth trying another vaccine. Whereas if you don't have any at all, then the vaccines probably won't work fourth or fifth time or third time even. So, but I understand that. But it's a bit like saying, well, it's not perfect, so why do it? You know, it's like, I don't know. If let's say you've only got one arm. Well, you don't want to tie that arm around behind your back and then go into a fight, do you? You want to fight with what you do have. And so to get that information, it gives us a sense of what's the situation. But I know it's not a promise and a guarantee.
And Adrian, the test I understand that we've had is a B-cell test.
Yes, that's right.
What would you comment about... the T cells and what part they play in this and whether there are tests available for those?
Yes. Interestingly, that's more available in the US than in the UK, but even in the US, it's not routinely available. I think you have to purchase it or be involved in a trial. T cells and B cells probably work together more than we think. And so there is this theory that maybe some people will respond with their Ts and not their Bs. Personally, I have neither Ts nor Bs working in my sort of body at all. So I know that neither will help. I just think we don't know much about the T cells, but what we do know is they're also specific. So they're a little bit like antibodies in that sense, but they're the cell itself, and they kind of target the infected cells, as I understand it. So they're useful to have around. They definitely play a part. And for some of us, unfortunately, with some blood cancers, the T cells may be a little bit tired out and not very effective anyway. So, but what we can measure and see much more is the antibodies. I mean, it's just, that's not saying that's the only thing, but it is the thing we can see easily. Good. Well, I think that's probably more than enough. And thank you very much for listening, those of you who are on live and those who joined us later.